presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
We're still in the aftermath of National Signing Day 2019, and we'll still have some recruiting content to follow up on and discuss in today's program, so we'll get to that here over the course of the next few minutes. If you don't mind, though, I want to start with something different, and I want to go back in time. A couple of months ago, we had one of the most compelling interviews on Dog Nation Daily that we've ever had. It was a conversation with a young, as a young man, a football player that I grew up idolizing, the great former Georgia running back Tim Worley. And Worley was dissatisfied, as many of you will remember, with how Georgia performed in the Sugar Bowl. And he did not mince words about his dissatisfaction. And I think that I heard from so many of you who felt the very same way that I did, that a lot of what Worley said was, in addition to being interesting in terms of his feelings about Georgia, it was motivational. And I think many of us, you know, felt energized by hearing not just Worley's passion for football and University of Georgia, but his passion for life in general, which is not to say that maybe everybody agreed with every single aspect of everything Worley had to say, but there was no denying that his heart was in the right place based on the things that he said. And one of the concepts that Worley talked a good bit about, both with us and in, you know, the essay that he wrote originally, was this idea of big team, little me. And what that was when I was growing up was a t-shirt. You know, back then you didn't have, like, you know, all the fancy stuff that guys wear under their football uniforms now. And back then it was just a t-shirt that you wore under your shoulder pads. And I remember going to picture day when I was a kid and seeing this look from the Georgia team of the gray t-shirt with the red letters. And at the top of it was that those big all caps letters, T-E-A-M, team. And below that, in much smaller print, was me. And the symbolism around this was unmistakable, that at the University of Georgia, the team was going to be bigger than the individual. The goals of the collective were going to be bigger than just one person's desire to go on to the NFL or be a big name or, you know, get a lot of attention and get a lot of touches, whatever. However you want to define it, the team was going to be bigger than that. And not only has Worley spoken about that with us here on Dog Nation Daily, but other guys, you know, the great former Georgia tight end Troy Sadowski is in our comment section a lot on the video shows. He's addressed that issue before, too. We've heard a lot of Georgia players from that issue, from that era, I should say, talk about the issue of the team being bigger than the individual and how much that meant to them, that message that was instilled over and over again by guys like the legendary coach Vince Dooley, the legendary former defensive coordinator Irk Russell, that message being instilled into them was such a valuable part of growing up around Georgia football and being a part of the program. And I think from Worley's perspective, the team being bigger than the individual might have been missing from UGA in 2018, especially in the late stages of the season. All of a sudden, it seemed like for some individuals, the ego or the desire to achieve personal goals had grown to the point that it was actually outsized in comparison to the team. And Tim Worley did not like that. And Tim Worley challenged Georgia to be better than that and different from that moving forward. In fact, when he was on Dog Nation Daily, he talked about that big team, little me concept, about how much it meant to him personally. And for him, this is a very personal story. Let me go back in time and let you hear Tim Worley right now.
I'm a true believer that sometimes you got to get confronted and you got to get, and I'm going to say this, you got to get pissed off before you can move forward. The truth will set you free. But, you know, there's a lot of pain in that truth. Here's two things that can happen, Brandon. You can either accept the truth, be offended, and move forward and make changes, or you can be offended and continue in your own way. When I fell out of school, after I blew my knee out when I stopped going to class, and I got to tell this story, Brandon, if we have time.
Please.
You know, I fell out of school and I had an opportunity to go to a junior college in Oklahoma in order to get my grades back up and to come back to the University of Georgia. I could have got offended. And there was an article in the paper that I read that Coach Dooley said that we were going to move on, you know, because we don't know if Tim's going to be here. You know what? I could have got offended at that. But you know what I did? I sucked it up and he was right. And he showed me what the big team, little me, meant. They were going to move on without me because they had to.
I mean, listen, how do you not get fired up and motivated by Tim Worley on that? And he says, listen, the things I have to say to the Georgia players, the things I have to say to the Georgia team, you may get offended by this. I'm going to offend you because I love you. And I'm going to let you know that Georgia football existed before you got here, and it's going to exist way after you're gone. And therefore, whatever you want to achieve on a personal level, any one player, any one part of this team, it's not going to be bigger than what the collective hopes and dreams of the organization are, which are to finish seasons on high notes, hoisting national championship trophies. Dedicating and devoting yourself to that goal is going to be more important than whatever you might want to try to do individually. Tim Worley said that. Dog Nation was listening, and you know what? Maybe the University of Georgia, its football coach Kirby Smart, the entire program was listening too, because I'm happy to say, based on a video that's been released by the Georgia football Twitter account, the concept of big team little me is being embraced at UGA wholeheartedly once again, and those really cool t-shirts that I grew up seeing Georgia football players wearing back in the 80s, guess what? Georgia's wearing them again. In fact, if you're watching on video, I'll show you the cool short video clip that Georgia has put out to both highlight the offseason workouts that are taking place right now and highlight that new message. Big team, little me. They're on the back. The front of the t-shirt says do more. We've already talked about why that's a really appropriate slogan for Georgia and the reference to the SEC championship where Georgia came up just short. The Sugar Bowl, which is a game that everyone wants to forget. That entire message, the do more, the big team, little me. Boy, I think it's really, really exciting to see Georgia embracing that once again. That there is a team goal this year to be a team, be oriented around team concepts, and to finish the 2019 season off on a note that is much, much greater than the way the Dog Nation and the team itself felt after the 2018 season. And by the way, when Tim Worley was on Dog Nation Daily to bring this concept to mind and challenge Georgia in this regard, he went into more detail about the true power that big team little me really has. The power to transform your mind and all of a sudden get you to do more than you thought was possible. Once again, Worley's words, both prophetic in terms of how Georgia's embracing this as a concept, but also important for us to all remember as we all try to better our lives in a lot of different ways. Here's Worley again.
It gave me strength. It gave me fuel to dig in and commit myself not only on the field, but off the field in the classrooms, too. I mean, it just gave me that drive. And when I came back, man, we all know what happened in the 1988 season. But sure, that was that commitment there, man. But I do think, Brandon, the University of Georgia will bounce back. And all I can say, here's the challenge. What are you going to do in this confrontation? And the reason I'm confronting, because it's from a place of love. I've seen so much apathy. I've seen so, not just the University of Georgia, but from across the board, there's an apathy in the atmosphere. There's a dishonor and a disrespect, a casual approach about things.
Boy, I love that. A casual approach about things. And once again, the insinuation morally is speaking to Georgia players and coaches. I'm telling you this because I love you. And I love you too much to let the 2018 season end the way that it did without you knowing that we expect more from you, we expect better than that from you, and we're going to challenge you to go out and show more than that in the 2019 season. If I say something like that, it doesn't really mean all that much. But if a former great Georgia player, a part, as he said in the past, of running back in university says that, all of a sudden it's got a lot more value, a lot more oomph behind it. And boy, I tell you what, it's really cool to see those big team little me t-shirts that Worley references back on the backs of Georgia players once again. I think that only speaks to good, positive things happening for Georgia in the 2019 season. And you heard Tim Worley right there when he was on Dog Nation Daily, the great former Georgia running back, predicting that very same thing to happen, that Georgia will have better days ahead than it had at the end of the 2018 season because of its willingness to embrace the challenge of being challenged and the necessity to unite as a team and make each and every person better. And by the way, the path that Georgia is trying to travel down in this regard is one that other SEC teams have gone down before too. Our buddy Mike Johnson, who is a great former Alabama offensive lineman, was in a very similar situation. He had an embarrassing Sugar Bowl performance. I don't know if Mike himself individually had a bad game, but Alabama had a terrible game at the end of the 2008 season against Utah. Got beaten up badly by the Utes. And when Alabama was facing these similar circumstances, well, its response to being humbled in New Orleans in the Sugar Bowl, it was, as Mike Johnson says, the kind of thing that Georgia can do as well. Here is Mike Johnson from a recent appearance on Dog Nation Daily on that subject.
I would tell Georgia fans not to panic and not to be too worried about it. It's not going to have a huge bearing on what you do next year. Now, if anything, BA, I would almost say it's a good thing because you look in the mirror at yourself and you say, boy, we can't really just show up and winning these games in this Georgia jury. We really do have to focus on what we have to do to be able to win on Saturday or on Monday or whenever the game is scheduled. So if you want to really swirl it around and try to spit out some really good spin on it, I'd say, listen, they put up posters of the Texas Longhorns all offseason. You remind yourself you can't show up and just win football games, and they'll probably spin this into a lot more victories in the near future. I don't think that this is some kind of ultimatum, I guess, on what Georgia will be in the future. It's not like any other game. It's a week long. It's in New Orleans. You get a month to prepare. There's guys going different directions, and Georgia will learn from it. I'd say don't panic. I've been through it, and the next year we win a national title, so it's not the end of the world.
So a guy that won an All-American or became an All-American as by playing on a national championship team says, the struggles that I went through the season before, the embarrassing bowl loss, actually laid the foundation for me and my teammates to go out and achieve that national championship success the following year. He's actually been down the path that Georgia's going to try to go down here in the 2019 season. The honest truth is, I don't know how much the big team, little me t-shirts really help out with all of this. I don't know, nor do I really know how much of a problem individual egos may have been on the 2018 team. I'm not behind closed doors on that. I don't know, nor do I know how this might have impacted other recruits that Georgia might have been pursuing at one point in time during the 2019 cycle. A lot of that is kind of unknowable. But what we can assume is that the dedication and work that's going on with these workouts right now is helping Georgia. And the reminder of doing more and devoting yourself to the team. It can't hurt as Georgia goes out and tries to achieve more as a team in 2019. Than it has up to any point in time at this point. My guess is that's going to be a pretty strong motivator for UGA. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thank you for being with us live today. Whether you get to us on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter, radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. And we always love being on the radio in the Classic City. We're also available as a podcast anywhere you want to look for those, including the Apple Podcast Player. And if you haven't subscribed to our Apple Podcast feed, especially if you watch on video, maybe some days you miss a show, and you want it delivered to you in a on-demand audio form, one of the best ways to do that is by subscribing to our feed on the Apple Podcast Player. It's a great way to have Dog Nation Daily delivered to you each and every day. We'll remind you to do that. We'll also post the show for you every day at theworldfamousdognation.com if you want to catch up on Dog Nation Daily as a podcast as well. It's Jeff Sintel coming up in just a moment. But before we get to that, I want to get into something as we kind of shift our attention back to recruiting for a moment. I want to kind of get into a criticism I've heard a little bit over the last couple of days. And I feel like this is probably a valid criticism, and I probably need to take a little medicine for this and maybe correct the record just a bit. Let me give you an example that I got on Twitter based on the conversation we have been having before George Pickens flips from Auburn to Georgia. My discussion about wide receiver recruitment, I guess, had led me to veer in the direction of saying, hey, Cortez Hankton, Georgia wide receivers coach, some of this is on you. Georgia needs that elite wide receiver. Georgia needs that five-star, top five player in the country at this position, Cortez Hankton, the same way that Sam Pittman pulls these guys at his position group and Del McGee pulls these guys for his position group. If you're going to be at Georgia, you got to do those same things for wide receivers. Georgia needs one of those to get over the hump and win a national championship. And somebody noticed that after George Pickens flipped to a UGA and did what he did, and he kind of wanted to call me out for that. In fact, if you're watching on video, I'll show you an example of this that I got on Twitter that's probably fairly representative of a good bit of criticism I've kind of gotten over time. Let me take a look and let you see some of that kind of stuff. Okay, it was basically a tweet that said something to the effect of, hey, BA, you've been kind of suggesting as of late that Cortez Hankton might be the weak link of the Georgia coaching staff, and maybe you might need to give Hankton an apology now after he goes out and pulls off what he did with George Pickens. And I think that's probably a fair criticism. I don't know that I've called Hankton the weak link of the Georgia coaching staff, but I've certainly wondered if he was going to step up and produce the elite signees that the other Georgia assistants seem to produce on the regular basis, that that's really the standard for Georgia. Well, in the case of George Pickens, that is indeed what Cortez Hankton has done now, and we have some evidence that Hankton was a big part of this recruitment. An example of this comes actually from the Auburn side of things. Benjamin Wolk, who covers Auburn recruiting for Rivals.com, was on our program yesterday, and in talking about how Georgia stayed a factor with Pickens over the long haul, one of the names that Ben credited for the Pickens recruitment was Cortez Hankton. So if you're looking for Georgia assistants and the impact that they're making in the recruiting trail, a lot of fan favorites among that group right now, and I think it's time to include Hankton among that group. Here's Ben to explain more about why.
You know, a lot of people will say, oh, Georgia came out of nowhere. That's not the case. I've been talking to George for a year and a half since he committed to Auburn in July 2017. And even when he committed to Auburn way back when, throughout the entire experience, there was pretty much never a time that George wasn't mentioning Georgia and that George wasn't mentioning Cortez Hankton and that George wasn't mentioning Kirby Smart. So this isn't something that just came totally out of the blue.
Yeah, so listen, I think that's an important part of this. A, that the Auburn folks are going to tell you, oh, Georgia swooped in the last minute to get George Pickens. No, they did not, and the guy who covered this for Auburn says exactly that. George was always a factor here, always putting those messages into Pickens' ear, and a lot of that was coming from Cortez Hankton. So when you think about Georgia assistant coaches getting it done on the recruiting trail, it sounds like it's about time to add Hankton into that group, who is quickly making a name for himself as also another elite recruiter amongst a staff where that's pretty much the only acceptable standard. Hankton now among that group as well. We'll talk more to Jeff Sintel about this coming up in just a moment. Before that, though, we like to kick off our weekend in style. We call it our Kroger kickoff to give you an update on everything happening around UGA and the state of Georgia over the course of the next couple of days. Let's take a look at that right now. First of all, the softball season begins this weekend. It's one of those, I guess, tournament deals. Georgia softball team going to be in action a lot of the next couple of days. Kind of exciting to get the spring sports going a bit here. So softball is coming up. That's going to be a lot of fun. Take a look at that all weekend long. Gym Dogs at Missouri tonight as they try to keep that season going, so we'll look for that tonight with the Gym Dogs in action. Then tomorrow, the men's basketball team will host Ole Miss ahead of the Anthony Edwards announcement on Monday. Georgia hoping for good news on the recruiting trail. We'll have more on that later on the program, but trying to get back to winning ways on Saturday at Stegman Coliseum against Ole Miss. Then the Lady Dogs back in action again on Sunday. That's all for the weekend as we get it kicked off right here with our Kroger kickoff here on Dog Nation Daily. Let me also remind you that we're heading towards Valentine's Day as well. And you can stop by your local Kroger on February 13th to 14th from 12 p.m. until 6 p.m. for a chocolate dipping station. Of course, while you're there, you can also shop for everything you need for Valentine's Day, sweets to cards to flowers and everything in between. But how about that chocolate dipping station from noon to 6 p.m. coming up on February 13th and 14th at your local Atlanta Kroger? So make sure you check that out. Kroger's going to take good care of you heading towards Valentine's Day. All right, we got a lot more fun stuff on the program to get to today, but there is some also news out there with Georgia. A player has decided to end his football career, and a transfer has come to the Georgia Bulldogs. A lot to deal with. Let's see how this impacts recruiting and roster management for UGA as we welcome in Jeff Sintel right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
We will say hello to Jeff Sintel on this Friday. Jeff, it's always great to have you on Dog Nation Daily. We appreciate your time, and we hope that this conversation finds you getting ready to enjoy a terrific weekend. How are you doing, and welcome to the program.
Hey, Brandon. I mean, you mean we're not on the Isle of Cyprus or anywhere off the coast of Greece and the Mediterranean, earning some downtime after National Signing Day this week?
Not as of yet. Not quite as of yet. We're still trying to pick up all the pieces and clean up all the need-to-know stuff coming off Signing Day, and we're glad to give you allow us to give a chance to do that with you right now. And let me start with this. It's kind of not really recruiting-related, but it impacts recruiting one way or another. Dogs 2, the 24/7 site, the Georgia 24/7 site, is reporting that Marshall Long is taking a medical red shirt at Georgia. Now, as I said before, you joined us on video that, listen, you know, we're going to wish him well. He's had a nagging injury, and I hate that for him for sure. I know he had bigger plans for his football career than it's ultimately going to turn out to be. But there's also the practical side of this, too, that, you know, Georgia gets a scholarship back now. And how does that impact what Georgia is going to do? Is there still room now to go out and get another graduate transfer after the Eli Wolf news yesterday? Does this scholarship go to someone that was already expected to be on the roster? How does all of this get managed by Kirby Smart now?
Well, managed. I think that's a pretty opportune word right now. And, you know, first of all, hat tip to Dogs 24/7 for having that story for everybody today. But maybe the casual fan reaction, or maybe the just typical Georgia reaction, fan reaction is probably going to be, maybe that should be unfortunate, but also sort of expected when you read stories about blue shirts and Georgia being, you know, on our Dog Nation forum, we talk all the time about how the ratio is The ratio was 61 returnees plus 14 early enrollees plus 8 signees. And now it's plus 2 signing day signees, which put the number 61 plus 14 plus 10. The number was 84 guys that were in the program. And, you know, a Plumlee situation where he has the blue shirt, you know, situations like graduate transfers, Eli Wolf count towards the 2020 class. Well, you can put X plus Y together and equal Z and figure out that Georgia didn't have a, you know, stack of Waffle House pancakes worth of scholarships left in inventory. This was a scholarship bursting or a scholarship limited type program, and that's the way Kirby Smart has always ran the Georgia program. So you started wondering about Marshall Long. Number one, he was coming back from injury. Number two, he wasn't playing or even competing for the job. Number three, Georgia signed Jake Cromartie last year. An elite program like Georgia doesn't really have the scholarship to allow itself to sign two punters in four cycles or two punters in three cycles. So what this does, it's an unfortunate thing for Marshall Long because he was a part of Georgia's first class coming out of China Grove, North Carolina. So what it does, he's not eligible to play, then it creates a spot for either someone off-season, graduate transfer market, or it just creates an additional slot for somebody going forward in 2020, because Marshall Long, if he had he remained with the program, was definitely eligible for a redshirt or a medical redshirt should things turn around for his career.
All right, I got some really bad news, Jeff, and I hate to say this way, but I got to be very candid here for a moment. You could go on over the course of this interview to correctly predict the entire 2020 class for Georgia, get every name exactly right. The only thing anyone's going to remember from this entire conversation is the fact that you just said that Waffle House has pancakes. Jeff, you're a Southerner by birth. You're a Georgian your whole life long. Waffle House doesn't have any pancakes.
Stand corrected, sir. That shows you how many. When I go to Waffle House, I get the scattered, smothered, dice cap chunk. So there, I do speak to Waffle House. I don't even look at the menu, though. So that would be my out clause on that one. My son likes to get himself some waffles, though.
But to be fair, now we've had many an argument over this over the course of time. When we are driving back from one of these road games, oftentimes I like to go by Waffle House, refuel, get some coffee, and make sure I got enough juice in the tank to make it home. And, you know, sometimes your dinner preference might be a little bit different than that. But to be fair, you have given me some grief for some of our late-night Waffle House stops on these road trips back home from various road games.
Well, Brandon, you are a man of the people, sir. And, you know, there's not many times I can say you have many things in common with Gus Malzahn, but you do like your post-game Waffle House to get the engine running on the way home.
Thankfully, I do not attend those meals wearing turtlenecks and sweater vests. That's the one thing will make me different than Malzahn, I guess, in that regard. So I'll take that as an advantage me on that. And speaking of advantages, I guess a little bit of an advantage for Georgia, too, this week. Mike Griffith had some great reporting for us on this at DogNation.com. The addition of Eli Wolf as a graduate transfer tight end. Jeff, tell me a little bit before we kind of move on to some other tight ends and how they're impacted by this news. Let me keep it to just Wolf for a moment. What do you think George is getting in Wolf? And I guess it's sort of hard to talk about Wolf without talking about the other stuff, too. I mean, how does this impact a guy like a John Fitzpatrick or something like that? Just some overall thoughts on an Eli Wolf from your perspective.
Sure. So if you're trying to win a championship, and I think 2019 is the prime year for Georgia to win a championship so far, considering assets like DeAndre Swift, Andrew Thomas, Isaiah Wilson, and J.R. Reed and others won't be back or candidates for the NFL draft. Reed's eligibility would be expiring, but you look at Wolf and you think, okay, if you're going to win a championship, Georgia currently has two veteran scholarship tight ends in the program, and lo and behold, they do like to run packages with jumbo sets with multiple tight ends, maybe their A set. They do need tight ends. And the other thing that you see from the National Signing Day Board is that Georgia welcomed two tight ends to the program. You really don't want to chase championships having to break in two freshman tight ends with a lot of playing time to major SEC football. Now, Ryland Goedy and Brett Pfeiffer are both definitely talented, but probably can't get a better pair of tight ends last year than Georgia stacked up in John Fitzpatrick and then Luke Ford. And those two guys weren't really, you know, lighting up the numbers at the tight end position or even getting a lot of reps until late in the game or on special teams with Ford. Fitzpatrick actually redshirted, so you look at it, Charlie Warner was the only guy that's really played any sort of big-time college football in a big-time SEC venue for the Bulldogs. So Eli Wolf kind of counterbalances that a little bit. I think maybe, and the question I hear all the time from fans, from readers, from dedicated podcasters that like to go to Waffle House, they tell me, what can Eli Wolf be? They look at that 5 catches for 30 yards. They start setting over-unders about production. And I would say this, probably somewhere between what Jackson Harris gave Georgia last year and then what Charlie Warner gave Georgia last year. That's probably the spot. That sort of range there is what folks maybe should hope for from Eli Wolf. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. He's a very physical player. I don't think anybody is expecting Isaac Nauta-like numbers out of Eli Wolf. And for all the grief that Georgia gets at the tight end the tight end position, Isaac Nauta does have a bank of film and some plays in his college career that will wow NFL scouts. And he did catch a fair set of balls. I think if you look at the NCAA stats last year, he was one of the top 30 tight ends in terms of receiving yards in the country. So that's maybe not as bad as everybody makes it out to be.
Yeah, I think I like the way we talked about this one before the hedges on Wednesday, too, where for Georgia, who really has virtually everything in place now for the 2019 season, that this almost becomes, I think I use the analogy of almost like in professional sports, a trade deadline acquisition, where if you can go out and get the veteran to put you over the hump in a year where you think you can win a championship, that's what you do. And for me, I guess that's what Eli Wolf becomes. As an overall tight end prospect, I don't know that I like him better than some of the guys that Georgia already has on its roster. But as a guy who can play the first game at Vanderbilt and be a contributor as that number two tight end for Georgia, he may just be more ready to do that than some other people are. And in a year where I think Georgia won a national championship, you don't want a missing capable second tight end to be the reason why you came up a couple yards and a couple points short once again. So from that standpoint, I'm fine with the Eli Wolf acquisition. I said before I wanted to see guys like John Fitzpatrick get their chance. I think they've earned the right to do that. I feel the same way about Goedy and others. But I guess Wolf for this year doesn't mean they can't have, you know, some sort of impact in the future. But this to me looks like Georgia really being in as much as it possibly can be a win now mode, right?
Yeah, win now is a great way to look at that. And for me, I think the fans should just look at that tight end room and see there was already going to be a lot of first-year acclimation with new tight ends coach Todd Hartley. Now, he's already very good at what he does at coaching that position, definitely recruiting that position. But in practice speed and everything else, you got to slow things down a little bit for the new guys, no matter how sharp they are, like a Ryland Goedy or a Brett Sither. So when you add another guy in there that can nod his head and says, "Coach, I got it," after one teaching point, coaching point, that's what you want. Georgia wants to play a lot of tight ends. I think the big picture here with Eli Wolf is just depth and championship depth. I think if I'm going to pick one guy out of that tight end room for people to think about, I'm going to say the name John Fitzpatrick. I think we said it a couple weeks ago. But that young man has a pair of hands that will flash all the time on Saturday. Big target as well, 6'7" and a half and about 245 pounds.
Yeah, I think it's a really fun name to consider. Let me transition and talk about something else for a minute. No surprise here. I'm not done talking about George Pickens as of yet. And Jeff, one of the clips that I played before you joined us was something that Benjamin Wolk, your friend and mine, said on the program yesterday about the role that Cortez Hankton played in this recruitment. Jeff, I don't have to tell you about what one of the subplots on Dog Nation Daily has been for quite some time. Georgia needing to recruit better at the wide receiver position, and some people have said that kind of almost sounded like I was accusing Hankton of not keeping up with what Dell McGee and Sam Pittman and certainly the defensive coaches with what they've been doing on the recruiting trail, that I was making it sound like Cortez Hankton was the weak link. The truth is, much like when Trey Scott first took this job, I didn't know what kind of defensive line coach he was going to be in terms of recruitment, nor when Hankton took the job as a relative unknown, did I know what kind of recruiter he was going to turn out to be. Well, Trey Scott has answered, I think, anybody's challenge on him with the defensive lineman he's brought in as of late, both in terms of 2020 commits and 2019 signees. You know, Trey Scott's answered that criticism, and it looks like Hankton's done that now too by going out and getting George Pickens. Ben said that he thought that Hankton was instrumental in this recruitment. How much of an impact do you think Hankton made in all of this?
Well, I guess you got to look at one simple fact now. For everybody that wants to look at the skins on the wall or the pelts on the wall in terms of recruiting at Georgia, well, Hankton has now signed two top five receivers during his time at Georgia, and he did it basically in just one class. So there you have him. That the reputation now has been has been streamlined with some elite talent coming into the wide receiver room. Pickens was very instrumental with Georgia. He felt very, very much at ease. Hankin was very much comfortable with, had an easy rapport with George Pickens, so that was great. What you saw there is that it was an easy vibe. I think going back to Pickens was always bringing up the name Georgia. Georgia was in it. Georgia was close. And they were able to close on this one as well, which was very interesting. Some of the comments that are up on DogNation.com, some of the comments that George Pickens made after his signing day announcement was, you know, he just saw the difference in Georgia and Auburn as being a program that wins the big games and is on the big stage, and he sees himself as a missing piece to push Georgia over the edge to kind of break through that championship wall right now.
Amen. I like that. I like the sound of that for sure. I don't mean to bring up a bad subject, but I guess I do want to do a minute's worth of autopsy on this, and I'll give you a little bit of time to clear your throat here. Kyra Lam, the four-star defensive back, chose Florida over Georgia this week. Kind of trolled Georgia a little bit with his announcement on that. We were there to cover that live on video as a part of our Kroger recruiting special. And for, you know, Jeff, I've said that it would be disingenuous for me to pretend that Georgia didn't want him or didn't have room for him or anything like that. This is a player that I believe that Georgia wanted. Certainly a player I would like for Georgia to have gotten. It's not the end of the world that he didn't choose UGA, but there was a spot for him at Georgia, and he just chose to play at Florida. You can't get everybody you want. Georgia doesn't get Elam. I guess I am a little bit curious about how this all did play out. Was this Mel Tucker being as big a deal in this as you had predicted it would be, that with Tucker at Colorado, all of a sudden there was maybe a little less reason to like Georgia? Would the announcement have gone differently had Tucker still been at UGA? If you don't mind, just a little bit of an autopsy on how it is that Kyra Lam is going to be wearing that ugly orange and blue uniform for his college career.
Well, you know, what Kyra did is he saw at that event where he chose Florida. You notice the family member right next to him with the tears falling down his face?
I did see that on Twitter. I didn't know what to make of that, but I did see the Twitter reaction to the family member who was either, you know, so joyously in tears because of the decision that Elam made, or maybe the opposite of that. We've seen some interesting reactions from family members, and I guess you'll add that to that.
Yeah, so Brandon Adams' interpretation of that was he thought he was crying because his dear loved one, Kyra Elam, is not going to win a championship. Is that Brandon's mind, what you thought that year was for?
I wouldn't be lying if that thought didn't cross my mind.
Well, so with Elam, nation's number six corner, he would have added tremendous depth to Georgia, especially when they need to match up with four really strong receivers in Alabama at all times. I think with Elam, he saw maybe the change factor was a big deal. He was clearly comfortable with Mel Tucker. I think the sole reason he went out to Colorado and gave them an official visit was because of that tight relationship with Mel Tucker. And, you know, for those that are quick to put new Georgia assistant coaches on hot seats in terms of, okay, you got to recruit now, we got to win now. So that happened with Trey Scott, and that happened with Cortez Hankton, both getting players, elite players on the board for Georgia. And I think now everybody's going to start looking at Charlton Morin and say, Charlton Morin, all right, you're on the clock now. You're an elite recruiter, otherwise you wouldn't have been hired by Georgia. Let me see what you got.
Yeah, especially since he's making like $600,000 or whatever. I mean, he got a pretty substantial raise to come to Georgia, and so I don't think it's too much to ask for him to bring a four-star defensive back with him if you're going to pay him more than $500,000.
Well, I mean, that's almost Brandon Adams' Dog Nation Daily money right there, man.
If only, Jeff, that was the case. Let me do one more thing with you before we let you go. You know, by the time we speak again, I think we'll probably have officially turned our attention to the 2020 class. So if you don't mind, you know, giving us the rollout here, get us started on the names, the storylines that you have in mind for the 2020 class. What do we need to know as that cycle gets ready to take center stage?
Clearly, first order of business is you got to start thinking about who's the quarterback. What are the quarterback targets? That's Robbie Ashford now at Hoover, of course, especially after his buddy George Pickens was just signed up by the University of Georgia. It gives the Bulldogs another ally in that cause right there when it was already going to come down to Georgia and Auburn. So then you keep going forward and you're like, okay, defensive line class. Georgia's set to graduate six defensive linemen off the 2019 team. Defensive line is a huge priority for Georgia. Five-star in-state defensive end, Miles Murphy, going to be an outside linebacker because he is extremely agile. Five-star
strong side defensive end, Brian Brzee. All those DND listeners are used to hearing that name when they're swilling down their coffee every morning. They know about the number one player in the country from Maryland. Keep going down that list. Georgia needs to stack up defensive tackles. They've already got Jameel Burrows out of Eastern. And then it's the five-star running back question. Quarterback, defensive line, and running back. No secret that Georgia likes to reload with elite talent. They're looking to take two five-star backs or two elite backs in the country with the 2020 class. And that's a really quick, fast start. The last name that gets brought up is one that probably deserves to go last. Last but definitely not least is Marietta tight end Tariq Gilbert. I don't know if anybody caught the first part of our interview when we broke down the Georgia tight end spot. They could stand to gain a 2020 tight end who's 6'5" and a half, 6'6", about 250, runs like he's about 220, 15, catches a lot of balls, is very productive, could be a five-star prospect at a lot of positions, defensive end, outside linebacker. He wants to be a tight end. He wants to play offense. Huge name, another huge name for Georgia in that 2020 class.
Jeff, we appreciate you sharing that insight with us and really every subject today as Georgia subtracts a punter, adds a graduate transfer tight end, starts its pursuit of another elite class for 2020, and, of course, everything in between, all that as well. We'll look forward to reading a bunch from you at DogNation.com, and we'll see you back here again on Dog Nation Daily very soon as well.
Guys, have a great weekend, and go to Waffle House and have some waffles, not pancakes.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
I mean, I am right about this, right? If you're going to be, you know, an authentic, true Southerner, you got to know that the Waffle House is not serving up pancakes. Now, to Jeff's credit, he's also not eating a lot of carbs from time to time. I'm around the Dog Nation family here, I take care of most of the carb consumption, to be honest with you. So maybe from that standpoint, Jeff could be excused for the misspeak there. But I knew that was going to be an issue. In fact, I already saw some comments about that of, like, pancakes at Waffle House. Yeah, listen, that's one that people are going to notice. Let me transition to our SEC through here. And let me start with, there's a very good chance that I'm not being fair, but I couldn't help but notice something that LSU coach Ed Orgeron had to say. Now, we talked yesterday a couple times about one of the big non-Georgia February signing day storylines was Ishmael Sopcher from Amy High School there in Louisiana. That particular part of Louisiana has not been kind to LSU. Alabama has gone in there and taken it. Is it Topanga Parish? How do you say the name? It's something along those lines. I don't know. It probably doesn't really matter where it is. But that particular area has been harsh for LSU and good for Alabama. Guys like Devontae Smith and folks like that have come from there to go to Alabama. And the latest Louisiana product from that part of the world to go to Alabama is now Ishmael Sopcher. Now, LSU has spun this as, other than Sopcher, we got every kid in Louisiana we wanted this year, including his high school teammate Devontae Lee, I think. But you know, nonetheless, this is a loss as Sopcher goes to Alabama. And so Orgeron was asked about it. And this is a little bit like George Pickens, the comments that Gus Malzahn made. I'm just not used to coaches talking openly about players they didn't get. That feels like a relatively new world we're in. But yesterday, Gus Malzahn kind of went off on what he knows about George Pickens choosing Georgia over Auburn. And now you've got a scenario where Ed Orgeron's doing the same thing, talking about Ishmael Sopcher. Let me show you the quote here and read it to you, what Orgeron says, and see if the one part of this jumps out to you that jumps out at me. He says about Sopcher going to Alabama, "I really don't care. We got the guys we want. I'm not worried about the guys we didn't get. I do believe we gave it all on the guy." I'm sorry, let me read this again. He says, this is Ed Orgeron, "I do believe that we gave it all we had on all the guys." Listen to this sentence right here. "We did it the right way. We went as hard as we could." Now, am I being unfair to say that when Orgeron says, "we did it the right way," that feels like a veiled reference to the possibility that maybe not everyone in the world does things the right way? Am I wrong for feeling that way? I kind of feel like that kind of comes from a place of, hey, listen, I don't know what to tell you about all these other programs, but we're going after these kids the right way. Now, maybe I'm reading too much into that, but that sort of feels like a bit of a reference towards, something else when it comes to Ed Orgeron. I could not help but notice that. I thought that was kind of interesting. And, you know, to Orgeron's credit, he has done a much better job in recruiting. I've admitted that before, that I was wrong on him on that. He'd always been one of these rah-rah guys that was good at developing relationships. And, you know, he'd been a recruiting coordinator, you know, for a million years before becoming a head coach. So he'd had deep ties in recruiting. But when you looked at the overall level of performance as head coach at LSU, some of that was kind of falling apart. They were losing too many kids from Louisiana. This year's signing class is a bit of a departure from that, so I'll give him credit for that. But there are a lot of LSU fans who are going to be a little disappointed that they weren't able to close with Soapsher because of the impact defensive lineman that he has a chance to be. By the way, speaking of big talk from various SEC coaches, you have the Tennessee assistant coach Niedermeyer, I think it's a tight ends coach. This is one of the same guys that kind of gave Georgia some grief after Jim Chaney left Georgia to go to Tennessee. He's back at it again. Let me show you his tweet from signing day. It's Brian Niedermeyer, that's his name, and it is the tight ends coach, correct? Yeah, tight ends coach. He's giving shouts out to different people. And he says, last but not least, big shout out to my guy, and he mentioned somebody. He says, best recruiting assistant I've ever been around. And then he goes on to say this, we're going to build this thing brick by ... And he says, just play it with the sunglasses emoji and then the hashtag Pruitt era. That's a little bit of a shot at Butch Jones, who always talked about wanting to build the Tennessee program brick by brick. Niedermeyer kind of taking some fun at that and poking a little bit of fun at that. He's not wanting to go down that road. So they are still having some fun at Butch Jones' expense at Tennessee, which is going to be more relevant coming up because by all intents and purposes, it certainly appears that Butch Jones is going to be an on-field coach for the Alabama Crimson Tide next year. And I believe he's actually going to be Niedermeyer's counterpart. He'll be the tight ends coach, I believe, for Alabama. So maybe that rivalry takes on a little bit of extra juice there with all of that. One more SEC story that I wanted to mention. The Cincinnati Bengals apparently have an opening for a defensive coordinator, and there are a couple of SEC names who have shown up as potential candidates for this job. They are both very relevant to Georgia. First of all, one of the names there is Todd Grantham, who, you know, I think has always really fashioned himself a bit of an NFL guy. I think he likes that level and wants to be thought of as an NFL guy. He now shows up as a candidate for this job. I don't know that he'd be considered the favorite or anything like that, but he's a Florida defensive coordinator. And listen, forget for a minute that I would obviously love to see a Georgia rival impacted by a decision like this. Don't you hate when these rumors pop up like the day after signing day? You know, you've done everything you can to get the signing class in place, and then all of a sudden, oh, guess what? So-and-so's a candidate to go to the Cincinnati Bengals. And you can't fault coaches for wanting to further their professional careers. I don't fault them for that at all. But at the same time, it's like there's a part of this is just never quite perfect with the way that we always see these coaching rumors pop up just after the lid is put on a signing class in any given year. But it's not just Grantham's candidacy that's relevant for Georgia. Another name that shows up here, and I've mentioned this a few times, Mike Elko, the current Texas A&M defensive coordinator, I think is a really fast rising name in the coaching ranks. This is a guy that Jimbo Fisher took from Notre Dame when he took the A&M job, what I thought was one of the big offseason coups from a year ago. Elko was a respected defensive coordinator with the Irish, and I think one of the reasons why I'm high on Texas A&M making a big step forward in 2019 is because of the fact that based on everything that I've been told and been able to see with my own eyes, Mike Elko is a really good defensive coordinator. I thought there was also a chance that Elko might get one of these lower-level head coaching jobs this year, too. But he's also mentioned now as a candidate for the Cincinnati Bengals. Once again, I have no way of knowing if he's a favorite candidate for this or anything like that, but he is being mentioned, and obviously A&M comes to Georgia in November. It is not too early to start looking ahead and thinking about this 2019 schedule for Georgia and how interesting it's going to be with the tentpole game against Notre Dame in the month of September and a Texas A&M team coming back to Athens for the first time in a long time, for the first time since big in the SEC, coming to Athens in November. I think that's going to be a matchup of top 10 teams, and I really do believe the SEC West, including Texas A&M, is much deeper this year than it has been in previous years, and I think that Georgia-Texas A&M could be a marquee game when it's played in Athens in November, so if you're thinking about what that game might look like then, at least think about the possibility that maybe Texas A&M could be with a different defensive coordinator than it has right now. That's worth watching for the future. But, man, as I said, it's not too early to start thinking about just how impactful some of these big 2019 games are going to be. One of the most exciting home schedules Georgia's had in quite some time. It will make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, I want to switch the subject for a moment and talk about a name that we haven't mentioned on our program before, but boy, based on the news the last 24 hours or so, it seems like it's about time to start talking about what is potentially a both kind of a curiosity, but also really big potential good news. Anthony Edwards is arguably the number one player in the country in high school basketball. He's certainly among the top players in the country, and he has been heading towards a decision about his college future. At one point in time, I guess the top three were thought to be Florida State, Kentucky, and also the in-state school, Georgia. Obviously, Tom Crean looking for a major recruiting win. Well, yesterday we had kind of a big piece of breaking news. Do we have a tweet that we can credit here? Yeah, this is WCTV Sports saying that Anthony Edwards cancels his Florida State visit and that Florida State's no longer in the running. So Edwards, I'm guessing that Florida State was thought to be the favorite and the leader for this up until this point in time, but now Edwards will not be going to Tallahassee. That has led a lot of the public and the community that follows basketball recruiting a lot more closely than we do here around Dog Nation Daily to say that Edwards is now thought to be going maybe to the University of Georgia. Now, of course, last year, Georgia went head-to-head with Kentucky over Ashton Hagans. Hagans chose Kentucky. We all remember that. But there was the complicating factor there of Hagans wanted to play for Mark Fox when Fox was gone. Hagans didn't feel as comfortable with Georgia anymore. It certainly seems like there are plenty of reasons to think that Edwards could be different for that with UGA. And there is no denying. Now, listen, I'm not on the NBA draft websites and things like that. It's not what I do on a daily basis. But I've certainly heard from plenty of people, including our buddy Connor Riley, who does follow this stuff closely, that says that, you know, there is a thought that Edwards is potentially a future number one overall pick in the NBA draft. How both weird and kind of cool would that be to see a guy like that potentially at the University of Georgia? It'd be a major recruiting win for Tom Crean. And for a fan base that's actually rallied around Crean this year, even though there haven't been a lot of wins on the floor to validate that, a big-time recruiting win, I think, would lay a nice foundation for Crean's future at Georgia. This is going to be a story worth watching on Monday morning as he gets ready to make his college announcement. It could be good news for UGA. So listen, I think that'd be great and fun. I can't wait to see where all that goes. We'll have a lot of Dog Nation coverage for you on that on Monday. Really excited about that. I'm also excited about this. You know, it's been 832 days since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. That's always good news around here. We love the idea of, first of all, Georgia-Florida as a rivalry really matters right now. I mentioned before the 2019 season for Georgia is going to be a lot of fun. I think the cocktail party is going to be really fun once again. It's always more fun to beat Florida in a year where Florida's feeling pretty good about itself, and I think Florida goes into this upcoming season kind of feeling pretty good about itself. So it'll be Georgia's job at that time to put them back in their place, and we think for the most part that's exactly what's going to happen. So between now and then, we will keep providing that Gator Hater Updater, and we know that around here, you're just like us. You enjoy being a Gator Hater. Hope you enjoy your weekend. We'll look forward to seeing you back here on Monday on Dog Nation Daily, and it'll be my pleasure to talk to you then.